There's a lot to report on tonight. I don't know how much we're going to get covered or not, but we'll give it a try. 250,000 people a year, I've said this many times, die from medical errors in this country. That's really inexcusable. That number should be far lower than it is. Dr. Fauci threw out the first pitch today, mask and all, and it went wildly to his left, out of control and out of reach of the catcher. I wonder if there's anything more to that. Interesting. Jumping on down to the other stories, there's a lot going on. The Oregon governor, that moron, has ordered now children as little as five-year-olds, it'll go down below that too, watch, to wear masks. I had my mask on today. I went to a store for 20 minutes or so. Not a good experience. I don't want to get sick, so I'll take precautions. But breathing and getting sweaty, it was very hot. Not a lot of fun. So I understand why people are really upset about this for a number of reasons. We've got a new 3D model showing what the coronavirus does to the lungs of people. Very instructive. That story actually came out of the Iranian news agency's Press TV channel on the internet. Don't expect the first coronavirus vaccine until early next year, said the World Health Organization. Meanwhile, the Russians seem to be ready to roll their first version out. Face masks become compulsory in stores in England from this Friday onward. Over 4 million coronavirus cases in the U.S., an increase of 1 million in just 2 weeks. So one wonders, and I've posed this question rhetorically several times, how much further has the virus really moved into the general population here than we know? We're not testing everyone. We don't know. Estimates range from 10 times more than the numbers indicate to 13 times higher. Some people are suggesting even higher. So this virus may be running through the majority of the population already. I don't see any way to really substantiate that one way or the other. It's a question of science, and we don't have the science to perform to find out. Called testing. Henry Nyman is back with us tonight. Hello, Henry. Welcome. Another crazy day.
Yeah, and Trump had another briefing, and
how did it go? Now, you gave him fairly reasonable marks for the first two. Not bad.
Right.
Not good,
right.
But not terrible.
Well, yeah. I could give you background, and you can kind of figure out how it goes.
That, okay.
I think that the Republicans basically gave Trump until Labor Day to get on track, or they're going to abandon him. And the polls that came out had him in Florida, Quinnipiac. Paul, what do you think the margin was in Florida?
Quinnipiac?
He has to win Florida. Yeah.
That's usually a fairly good poll. I don't know how they sample anymore, but what I go ahead, tell me.
Down 13.
All right.
When you're down 13 in Florida, remember, they had to count chads. Florida is
right.
Usually razor thin, you know, at one point,
right.
One way or the other. It's always pretty much a toss-up.
Right.
I don't remember ever seeing a 13-point lead in Florida by a presidential race.
Well, these are
but
unprecedented
anyway.
Times. Nothing would surprise me,
right.
Frankly.
Right. So basically, those were the clues to let you know that Trump had to, kind of rein things in and kind of focus a little bit and look a little bit more presidential. And so he only reads from the script. He's got a script.
Mm-hmm.
He reads it. It's relatively short. And then he only takes about four or five questions And there's a fair number of reporters, so he kind of can pick and choose which reporters he wants to ask the question. So he's been fairly judicial from that standpoint. So there haven't been as many controversies with him responding to reporters. And he hasn't made a whole lot of wild kind of, take Clorox for your lungs or figure out how to get a UV light in your body. But so he is sticking to the script. And they aren't bad from that standpoint. But the content is a bit lacking. And this is another clue. He made a big announcement today. And the big announcement was that all these delegates, they want to come to Jacksonville to hear him give his acceptance speech. And, he got all this interest in it. And, really, it's probably not a good time, and Jacksonville's canceled. So there's not going to be a Jacksonville. Well,
given what we're seeing, that's an appropriate thing, I would project.
About 2 months ago.
Sure.
Well, it's a little late, but so he canceled Jacksonville. Now that tells you again that bringing a bunch of delegates into Jacksonville with their pandemic getting out of control is not going to win him a whole lot of votes. And so he basically made that announcement. And then he said that, here's a map of the hotspots. He said, hey, it looks pretty good in the Northeast. Looks pretty good in the North. It looks like all the problems are in the South or the West. And, it'll all work out. That was his description of how he's going to take care of this. I guess that's one step above it'll all disappear, but today it will all work out. No specifics on exactly how it's going to work out. And then he cited some statistics on what percentage of the deaths were children, and that was a low percentage, and he used that low percentage to say that there's really no reason that we can't open up all the schools. And so
he's not wavering on that. All right.
No. Well, he's even talking about, funding. He's talking about, I don't remember what the number was. Maybe it was $100 billion or some relatively large number that was going to be earmarked for schools to help them get ready for that. So he made that announcement. And that was pretty much the highlight. Again, the briefing was brief. It was again, less than a half an hour. And, I think the idea is to look more presidential, get in front of the audience on a daily, so far it's a daily basis. It's been three days in a row. And his briefings coincide with, over 1,000 deaths in the last 3 days. There have been over 1,000 deaths in the U.S. and
per day.
Per day, and it hadn't gotten back to it. It had fallen below 1,000. I think June 6th or so. So it's been about 5 or 6 weeks since there were 1,000 deaths, and that was part of the declining death rate that he was highlighting. And now that it's been 3 days in a row at 1,000, it's not, it's not that the death rate is so outstanding anymore, because it's definitely going to go up. It's not even a probably. It's definitely going to go up because of the explosion of the number of cases. It was near 70,000 cases again today. So the new normal now is, it seems to have leveled off a little bit, but at this high level, it's leveling off in the 65 to 70,000 cases a day, A few weeks ago, it was half that. It had fallen down to 20, and then it kind of started to creep up, and then it went to 30, 35, 40, 50, 60, 70. And so now it seems to be leveling off 65 to 70 cases a day. Today, most of the media reports said the U.S. hit 4 million cases. The Worldometer actually had it at 4, I don't know what I just said, 4 million cases is what I should have said.
Right.
And it was actually, the Worldometer said 4 million yesterday, but everybody's in agreement that by today, it's already hit 4 million cases. And it was at 3 million cases 16 days ago. So it only took 16 days to go from 3 million to 4 million. And it'll take less than 16 days to go from 4 million to 5 million. So, you can kind of look at the calendar, and before school starts, it'll be over 5 million cases. And he did kind of put a little caveat in there. He said, well, some of these hot areas, school openings might be delayed a couple of weeks. He's already starting to waffle on exactly when and how the schools should open. And he said, that's up to the governors. So it's kind of a state by state. And the bottom line is the situation is deteriorating. It's deteriorating at a pretty good clip. And he still doesn't have a plan other than it will all work out. And he really doesn't have that much good news to announce. And I just took a look, and you can't measure these things, and said something about deaths at hospitals normally or something. If you want to get a reality check, you don't really have to say, are they doing enough testing? And down in Florida, now they're trying to say, somebody said they were never tested until they were positive. So they're calling positives on people that weren't tested. Or if you basically have a car accident and die and you're positive for COVID, there's a COVID death. And they're just throwing out all kind of nonsense to say all these dead bodies are, they don't really exist. And in Arizona, I think they've got 5 trucks full now. I think each truck holds 50 bodies. So they got 250 bodies in the parking lot. And that's not from accidental errors or from car accidents. That's from COVID deaths. And like I said, if you want a reality check, and I've mentioned this site before, but it's worth mentioning again. There's CDC's got a site that's on excess deaths, and the site just maps how many people died. Doesn't matter what they died of. If they got a, if a death certificate was written for the death, that they go and they graph how many death certificates have been filed. Not for COVID. Not for accidents in a hospital, not for car accidents, not for just if you're a U.S. citizen and you die and the coroner or somebody writes up a death certificate and it gets filed, they graph how many death certificates they got each week. It's a weekly report. It comes out, it's broken down for all 50 of the states. And if you want to see reality, just take a look at Arizona. I mean, Arizona, basically had a little dip, a little blip, I should say, back in January of 2018 from, bad flu. That was a bad year for flu. they had about 3 or 4 weeks where they just barely got above the threshold. And other than that little cluster, they had 0 weeks in 2017. They had 1 week in 2019. And prior to May, they had 1 week. Actually, that was the end of 2019. So they actually had two in 2019. And they've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. They have 13 weeks in a row that they've broken through the thresholds. And in the past 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks, every week beat the preceding week. And they're up in the neighborhood of, they're now north of 2,000 deaths a week. And you don't get these increases above the threshold like this unless, like I said, you have a very bad flu and it just barely gets above and it lasts for a few weeks. You don't get 6, 8, 10 weeks in a row, where, and especially where it is now, where the number of dead go up every week, and they've gone from about 1,400 deaths a week to 2,000 deaths a week in the last month. So that's what the reality is. Those people are dying from COVID. They don't have anything to do with, errors in the hospital. They don't have anything to do with somebody, a sudden explosion of automobile deaths in Arizona. They don't have anything to do with the heat wave. It gets hot in Arizona, every year in July. They don't have any, all the other peaks they had prior to the last couple of months have been in January and coinciding with flu.
Got it. All right. You made your point. Two things. When does flu season start here? We're 8 weeks away or less, correct? Middle of October? That's flu season normally?
Yeah.
Okay. The second thing, if everybody in this country, 320 million people, could be tested tomorrow and legitimate results would come in, what is your guess as to the percentage of people who would show positive?
Who are currently infected or who have been infected?
Let's just both together. Let's mix them up here. Let's combine them. So how many in this country have had it or have it right now? What do you think?
Two different questions.
I know. We'll take
it however
you want. In the
entire country on an average?
320 million people. Yeah. How many people do you think have had it or have it? 50%, 40%, 20%. What do you think? In other words, the more we test, the more we find. That's where I'm going with this.
Less than 10%.
So less than 10. Okay. All right. Less than 10% so far. That means there's a lot of unplowed fields left for this virus to work through.
As far as finding, the antibody test, as long as you have a representative population, is going to tell you, you don't have to test everybody. You just have to find out what percentage of the people.
But that test you said in the past is grossly unreliable, unless it's gotten better.
No. It really comes down to what the percentage is in the country. If the percentage is very low, then you're going to get a fairly high false positive rate. But if the percentage is moderately high, then the test is going to be a lot more accurate. The accuracy has to do with, it's going to be off by a little bit. And if there aren't any cases out there, then those positives are going to be amplified. Those positives are probably going to be false positives. But if there is a fair amount of activity out there, then if it picks up 90% of the cases, then it's going to be 90% accurate. If it's giving you positives where it's a real low percentage in the population, then it could get up to be, wrong half of the time. When it says you're positive, it would be wrong half the time. It's not going to be wrong when it says you're negative.
Well,
most of the time it's going to be
need
right.
We need a better antibody test.
So the point is that the antibody test doesn't depend upon you testing millions of people to get an answer. And the antibody test says in New York, it got around 20%. That was kind of the exception. In California, it was down around 6 or 8%. For the entire country, it's probably on the order of 10%. So that'd be, 10% would still be 30 million people. And the estimates suggest that might even be a little bit high. The idea is that, it may actually be off by a factor of 10 as far as the testing is concerned. In that case, it depends upon how much you're testing. And the CDC would like to see the positive rate to get down below 5% or so. So if you're up above 5%, then that's an indication that there's a lot of cases in your area and you're not really testing as much as you should. You're missing a lot of cases. And then if it's in some of these hotter areas where the number's at 15 or 20 or 25%, then that means that there's a lot more cases than the number you've got that mm-hmm. you're detecting.
So, let me just go back to what you said.
And 20%. If the actual number of cases is about 10 times what mm-hmm. is detected.
Right.
Well, there have been 4 million that have been detected. I mean, some of those are the same person twice. But
right.
basically, just round numbers, there's 4 million. That means that there's maybe 40 million. So that would be a little above 10%. So 30 to 40 million is probably a good estimate. There's a lot of people out there that haven't been infected. And it's not at all clear if the being infected is going to give you long-lasting antibodies. So if you were infected 2 months ago, if you were infected 2 months ago, that may not really have a whole lot of protection, right?
Right.
And so the vulnerable population. Whether it's, 20 million have been infected or 40 million have been infected, or there are the mild ones, so that maybe 50 or 60 million have been infected, it doesn't mean that there's only 270 million left. It could be a lot of those 50 million can be reinfected, especially if they're the ones that were asymptomatic, so they had enough virus to detect in the test, and they might have had enough virus to infect another person, but they didn't really have enough virus to give you a strong enough immune response that's going to prevent you from getting infected 2 or 3 months later. So there's a lot of room for the virus to run, and it's not flu season. That these types of respiratory illnesses are more common in the winter.
We also need to remember the flu season talks of crowded schools, classrooms, malls, retail buildings, shops, and other areas that people accumulate in, and they're not in many cases being allowed to do that anymore. So maybe the influenza season might not be as bad as it may be. I don't know. Because people are not going to be accumulating in groups like they used to, or even visiting the same places like they used to.
Yeah, I mean, it is possible that social distancing will reduce, you know, many different infectious diseases. It won't just be the coronavirus, because they all pretty much require the same type of contact. And the virus, you know, basically it's only got a limited number of genes, really can't survive without infecting a host. And generally, the infections in the host are limiting. You know, either the host dies or the virus gets cleared. Most of the time, the virus gets cleared. And so there may be that type of competition. It's a little bit too early to say. That last flu season, there really wasn't enough of the coronavirus. I mean, I don't know what the situation was like in China, whether China had a decline in influenza last January, February, or Wuhan, may not the whole country, but if the city of Wuhan, I don't know how many flu cases, they probably were limited because people were literally locked in their houses, and they probably weren't getting COVID, and they weren't getting the flu either. They were basically, you know, pretty much held captive. So, the main issue, though, from Trump's, you know, daily briefing is that he's doing this. He's trying to look more presidential, but so far,
did he succeed?
Well, he looks presidential, but the things he says doesn't really, you know, hold on. There's not that much content in it. I mean, like, to announce the Jacksonville convention had been canceled, there was this whole lead up to it. Yeah, we got all these people that want to come, and there's all this interest.
That's Trump.
And people are planning. Right. But that's not really presidential. Is that
no.
You got to go?
I agree.
No, all this introduction on why. Unfortunately, yeah. We're going to have to cancel it. I mean, the bottom line
that's his childish ego at work.
They had to cancel it because there's way too much virus in Florida. Mm-hmm. And the last thing they need is delegates flying in from all over the country and bringing that much more virus in. Or even if they don't all bring it in, they're just going to all congregate together, right. You know, and move the virus around and spread the virus amongst themselves. So it isn't going to go over big. But the big problem Trump has in Florida is the problem he has with the pandemic, and how he's handling it. I mean, he's talking about soldiers going out and battling the virus and essentially dying so that the economy can thrive is essentially what his battle plan was. And he was essentially throwing the senior citizens under the bus. So he was saying, well, you know, somebody's got to die. So, you know, if we lose a few seniors, you know, if we can keep the economy cranked up, it's worth that trade-off. And the seniors don't think it is. So,
well, the seniors in New York who are still alive, I think, would agree with you.
Well, the I think the seniors in Florida agree. That's why he's 13 points down in Florida, because they've got a lot of senior citizens. And, you know, it's clear. You know, it's clear to just about anybody except maybe the governor that when the CDC says, you know, these are the requirements to go and start easing up the lockdown, and you need to show whatever it was, 14 days of declining numbers in the cases. I mean, the requirements were not that severe. You know, they were not that hard to meet if you really had the virus under control. And Trump came along. I mean, he started with Arizona. That's why the Arizona is so remarkable, that he when they flew into Arizona to go to the Honeywell plant that was making masks, and they still had the lockdown on. He said, you don't need this lockdown. We're going to get this economy going again. You can kind of just ease things up. And the governor went ahead and did it that day. And, you know, that was kind of the beginning of the end for Arizona. I mean, they've got rates of 25% positive there. They've got issues where they have cases that they have to fly out of state because all their hospital beds are full in state. And they've got five trucks of with 50 bodies each sitting in the parking lot because the morgues are full. And they don't have any place to put the dead bodies. And that number is going up. I mean, the whole idea that you had all these cases, but the case fatality rate was low, was just a point in time. I mean, if you've got all these people in the hospital, there's no magical cure. There's no reason to think that all these people going in the hospital are all going to get out of the hospital. And it takes time for them to die. And so when you see all these people going into the hospital and all you're focusing on is how few had died, you're not really paying attention, because you, before you can say that the death rate is going down and staying down, you have to say that for some reason all of these people going into the hospital are going to get discharged. And you know, there have been some improvements, and we kind of mentioned them before. They got an antiviral that has some benefit if they use the steroid, the dexamethasone, you know, properly at the right time. They can kind of control the cytokine storm and get a benefit on that. They got a little bit more experience on when to put a patient on ventilators and they should be on their stomach instead of their back. And they have these other things that they can kind of show improvements around the margin. And then they, you know that if they're not overwhelmed and they've got cases coming in at a slower pace, and they can spend more time in setting them up on a ventilator and fine tuning it and, you know, basically, individualize the settings, and they can get a better result. And so they can improve on the numbers that are dying to a degree, but it's not going to be that dramatic that all of a sudden the cases going in are all going to survive. And to some extent, because it seems that one of the groups that was getting affected is young people that were going, you know, on beach vacations, or they were going to bars. I mean, they actually had the bars open. And so they were not social distancing. They thought they were invincible, and then they started getting infected. And that in general, they do better than the older population. So that if you've got a bunch of young people coming in, the number that dies from those initial cases is not going to be as high. But if you got a bunch of young people that are infected, they're going to, you know, slowly infect their parents or grandparents, and the age is going to start going up. And then, as I mentioned, with that big resort that's got 120,000 people or something and 50 golf courses, they're retirees, and initially, the virus wasn't there. They, for some reason, thought it wasn't going to get there. They didn't have a good reason to think that, and they were wrong. It did get there. And now they're getting, you know, double-digit numbers of cases announced every day. And these older patients are not going to fare that well. They are going to have deaths, and the death rates are going to go up. And you know, in a few weeks, Florida is going to start looking like Arizona, where they have this big spike in cases, and it's way above anything that flu does. It's not the equivalent of flu. And this is still coming in the first wave. This is still the herald wave. This isn't really the big wave. You know, the flu pandemics in general, and you know, most of the prior ones have been flu pandemics, kind of come in two or three waves, and there's one milder one in the spring.
And so this is this is an unprecedented viral profile. This is unprecedented.
Well, the numbers are, well, it's not unprecedented. It's a lot like 1918. That's what it looks like. You know, the seasonality part is a little bit different, but it's mostly different. Unfortunately, it's mostly different in the United States. That in Europe, it was much more traditional. They had a burst of activity. They went and had a lockdown.
People well, everybody knows that the Chinese tweaked the virus and released it through its consulates all around the country, and that's why we're suffering more.
Oh, please. Nobody knows.
That's a joke, Henry. That's a joke.
Yeah,
it's a joke.
I know. Well, unfortunately, I've heard it elsewhere. You know, there's still people who think something happened in the lab and that it's...
All right, we're talking about consulate closures now. And Pompeo talking that the Chinese people should rise up against their communist overlords. And this is all not looking good. Not looking good. Go ahead.
So the point was that in these other countries, the it does look a lot more like past pandemics. You get an initial wave. It doesn't go through the whole population. It's somewhat limited. They go and they take precautions. I mean, in the past pandemics, there really hasn't been that much of a treatment. I mean, there wasn't 1918 that even know what a flu virus looked like. You know, they didn't really.
They didn't know what a bacteria
was. Viruses
then.
Until 1930.
Right.
Well, the viruses, they could figure out that they could filter it through smaller holes and still get the disease. So they knew it was smaller than bacteria, but they didn't really know what it was. And so there was no real treatment at the point. I mean, they didn't even have antibiotics then. So you could have ended up dying from bacteria, secondary bacterial infection after you had the flu. But the point is that all they could really do back then is kind of what you can do today. They may not have had the ventilators. They might not have had as many options with breathing assistance. But they didn't really have anything to treat them with, and they did have masks, and they did. I don't know if they all wore them properly, but they at least made an effort with the mask, and they made an effort to kind of separate out the sick from the well population, and some of them had enough sense to know that having parades to celebrate the end of World War I wasn't necessarily a good idea, and basically didn't allow for any large gatherings, and others figured that the flu was being kept somewhat of a secret anyway, so a lot of the population didn't really know exactly what was going on.
What was that? What was that virus? How would you categorize that 1918 pandemic virus?
Well, it was H1N1, and it was had a very high case fatality rate, and
but it was
part of it was associated with
traditional
a cytokine
H1N1.
Storm.
All right, it was traditional H1N1. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell Trump it didn't go away. I mean, the H1N1, was killing a lot of people for multiple waves. It had a very mild one the spring of 1918. It had the the worst one in the fall of 1918, and then I came back. It was around in the spring of 1919. I think it was around in the fall of 1919 also. So it had like something like four different waves. And the later ones were not as bad as the one in the fall of 1918. Mm-hmm. And then it became more of a seasonal flu. It was still the same H1N1. It kind of, evolved over the years. But it didn't go away until 1957, when it got replaced by H2N2, when it was a new pandemic. So it was a new mm-hmm. strain, and it had jumped from birds, and it had changed its receptor binding domain, so it could bind to human receptors instead of avian ones, and it created the Singapore flu, it was called. It was initially seen in Singapore in 1957. And that one didn't go away. It got replaced, too. They changed. The N2 stayed the same, but the H2 changed to H3. And then in 1968, it's called the Hong Kong flu. You had the H3N2. And then, like in 1971, H1N1 reappeared, and there's some speculation it was in somebody's freezer, and it got out and started and took off again. And we've had H1N1 and H3N2, although the H1N1 was the seasonal version, and it got replaced in 2009 by the swine flu pandemic. That was also H1N1, but it was the swine version of it. And that's what's around today. So in each of these cases, the pandemic didn't disappear. It got replaced by another version of the virus, another serotype. And that's why Trump's expectations that this virus is going to disappear. Initially, it was going to disappear in April. Then he had some other economists making predictions and said it's going to disappear in June or something. Totally unrealistic numbers. He kind of came out with this and was essentially saying it was going to be gone in 2 weeks or something, which is a ridiculously low number, no matter what kind of assumptions he was making, and he was wrong. And then Trump, broadened it, said it's going to go away when it got hot in the summertime. And like I said, you got probably the most deadly outbreak in Arizona, where it's, well above 100 degrees. And so it didn't disappear because of the heat. And it's not going to disappear. There may be enough immunity so that the getting infected won't have as severe consequences, but it's going to hang around, and when you get this much virus in the human population, and you're infecting this many people, where there's 4 million cases in the U.S., which might really be 30 or 40 million, and it's likely to go up to 1 or 200 million. And it's even though there's more in the U.S. than anywhere else, it's not that it isn't anywhere else. It's everywhere. And some places, like Brazil, they're crazy enough that they may mismanage their outbreak badly enough that they could actually catch the U.S. and we got a big lead. And I don't know, it's not really clear that anything good's going to happen in the U.S. So Brazil might not catch us, but they may. And that would just increase the amount of viruses out there. I mean, it's in Africa, it's spreading in Africa. I mean, there was some nonsense talk at the beginning about Africa having some immunity because they had something to do with malaria and like the hydroxychloroquine.
I missed that one, fortunately.
Was working in, in Africa, and they didn't really get much of this virus because of that or something. And it's all where the virus is and how long it takes to spread and well, you know, what populations.
You'll be interested to know that Brazil's president, Bolsonaro, has tested positive a third time now.
Well, I don't think you'd be, you know, infected that many times in this short period.
Well, it's the same infection.
Right.
He was out on his motorcycle today, so.
Right, but what I'm saying is that, you know, calling it multiple infections is
No, they just tested three times positively, same infection. That's the way I read it.
Yeah. So, I know, and I'll keep ignoring it and downplaying it, and it'll probably end up getting worse. Yeah, so that's, that's the thing about the virus. It's not a coincidence that the four countries with the highest number of cases is the U.S., Brazil, Russia, and India. And all of them are headed up by a dictator, essentially, that thinks they can just talk the virus down. That they go, they manage their populace with just talk. And they think that they can manage the virus that way. And the virus really isn't listening. And it's just going and doing what it wants to do. And if they're ignoring it, that's the ideal conditions for the virus. It can just go on and spread among the population. Then when you politicize it, like it is in the U.S., and you have all these issues about, you know, why you shouldn't wear a mask, and you have others that say, oh, it's not a big deal. You know, in Brazil, he calls it the little flu, and the U.S. saying it's no different than the flu. Trump says it's got 100 different names, and he calls it, you know, the Kung flu, and he used to call
Wuhan
it the China.
Flu.
Yeah, whatever. He's got all kind of names, but they all seem to zero in on flu, or at least a good percentage of them do. And and it's just not true. And that's what the problem is that the U.S. hasn't got the virus under control. They kind of stand out among the various countries in the world. You know, they come up with these stories trying to say that the virus is coming in from Mexico, and A, Mexico's got a different lineage, and B, most people want to get out of the U.S. They're not looking to come into the U.S. because of the COVID. There's just way too much. And they don't want to come into the U.S., and they don't want U.S. citizens to go out of the U.S. and come into their countries. And
this I just found a funny picture from India. It's in a video. It's a guy wearing an ear loop mask. It's cloth of some kind. And it says in big numbers and letters, says N95 right on it. It's a typical throwaway I don't even think it's a surgical grade mask. It says N95, high quality. And then there's the name of the manufacturer under it. So these people, hundreds are dying a day in India. This is not an N95 mask by any measure. It's a joke. So they're getting sold.
Yeah.
Con artistry as a worldwide avocation. Having a field day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the U.S., they don't have N95s. They tell people to wear scarves. You know,
that's right.
Handkerchiefs. And so,
well,
you know,
it'd be tantamount to putting N95 on a scarf. This is a joke. I'll send you the video if you want to see it.
Yeah, but the bottom line is that the virus is here. There's still no program. There's still opposition. I'm reading now there's demonstrations not to remove the lockdowns, but, you know, to not make masks mandatory or not, you know, required.
Oh, really?
To
keep
go
the lockdown, but no mask mandate.
Well, no, there isn't a lockdown. So they can't protest about lift the lockdown. So they're protesting about lift the mask.
I misunderstood.
So, this is like yesterday or something. That's what I'm saying, that if you've got a reasonable percentage of the population that are basically going to do what they want and kind of ignore the benefits of the mask and just say, I'm not going to wear it, and kind of berate people that do wear it, you're going to keep the virus going. And the U.S., I think, is kind of uniquely situated there, where it's gotten real political. Wearing a mask is political. A certain segment of the population refuses to wear a mask, and there's no real travel restrictions, and so right. the virus is going to move around, and you know, if you get it under control one location, it's going to just move to the next location.
All right.
So we'll see, but I'll predict there'll be 1,000 deaths tomorrow, but that's a pretty safe prediction.
And, all right.
We'll see how it looks then. Okay.
Thanks,
Henry.
See you
tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, there he goes, and here we go. We'll be right back tomorrow night. Lots going on. We'll keep on top of it for you. Thanks for listening in. Take care.